Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Manufacturing Talk Radio, your source for breaking news, business trends, and economic forecasts here and abroad that impact one-third of America's economy. And now your hosts, Lou Weiss and Tim Grady.
And welcome to this episode of Manufacturing Talk Radio. We are anxiously awaiting our guest, which is Dr. Chris Keel, to join us. He's a busy guy these days, so we're going to chat with you on things that are happening with the economy and also with Manufacturing Talk Radio. I have with us, however, my co-host, Lou Weiss, who is in a car working his way down Route 6. Lou, what's happening out in the real world as I sit in the Atlanta studio?
Well, you know, it's interesting that being up on Route 6, which nobody knows where that is, it's on Cape Cod, news is about as remote as the location of Provincetown, Massachusetts. You know, when you read the banner newspaper, it's quite hysterical. It's, you know, you find out who got arrested for driving with a suspended driver's license. That becomes a headline. So nobody hears anything about Trump, China, Canada, Mexico, Europe, Brexit. That doesn't exist up here. So
I may move there.
Yeah, for 4 or 5 days of being totally off the radar, it's absolutely restful, including a good 10, 11, 12 hours of sleep every night. So I'm well rested, and I'm just waiting to go head-to-head with Chris when he arrives, our humorous economist. And I gather he's not with us yet.
He has not yet joined us in the studio. So, you know, it's interesting. We've had some conversations this week with Tim Fiore from the ISM with a very good number reporting there. And we did that interview, and we met with his co-partner, his other committee chair, Anthony Nieves, who had a stellar report, again, from the non-manufacturing side. And frankly, the credit managers index is showing quite favorable information as well. So, all in all, it looks like this year is going to wrap up real strong, and we'll just have to see what next year brings.
Well, what was really interesting in our conversations with Tim and Anthony is that the reports that showed up in you know, for this month, the December report, which, by the way, there's going to be a forecast next Monday, which we're going to be doing a show with them. Their indication is that even though the first quarter of a new year generally is a little bit on the weak side, that indication is not showing its ugly head.
No, and it's interesting that it's not showing it in Chris's report either from the Credit Managers Association. And by the way, we should mention that Dr. Chris Keel is the chief economist for the Credit Managers Association, the National Association of Credit Managers, NACM.org. And you can always read his full report at NACM.org under news, which is where we tune in with him to read all of the detail that he provides, which is going to be more than we're going to fit in this brief interview.
Well, that's for sure. But all in all, it's very exciting about what's coming for next year, even though there seems to be some negative feelings regarding Europe, China, South America as all retreating, all for different reasons, but nonetheless on the retreat. So my question is, how long can the U.S. economy be as prosperous as it is when the rest of two-thirds of the world is not doing quite as well? So I don't know how we can support that.
Well, I don't know either, Lou. It's a very good question. Certainly, the talk of Brexit, I guess there's something like 100 ministers of parliament who are not supporting the Brexit deal. I don't know. I guess there's over 500 ministers of parliament, but there's quite a bit of resistance, and their choice is bad and worse, a bad deal or no deal. And the Bank of England said if it's no deal, then the English should expect an 8-point drop in their GDP and a recession in 2019. So that'll be interesting.
That's pretty poor considering that our exports to Europe in particular has actually gone up. So we can expect that to go down. So again, I don't know how we can support ourselves positively when Europe and China, who's I believe is going to have a minus 2% GDP this year. That's quite a fall from 14% GDP of a few years ago.
Oh, wow. We remember watching those numbers, which were astronomical when they were showing double-digit GDP numbers. And we have a resident expert with All Metals and Forge Group that Lou has employed for many years, who's very, very familiar with China. And she has always indicated that a 6 to 7% GDP in China is about what we would see if we had a 1 or a 0.5. So they've got to have a pretty aggressive GDP to be healthy, Lou.
I would say so. And that, of course, is if the 14% GDP was the actual number in the first place.
Yeah, there was some debate that their calculations were what Bush 2 would have called fuzzy math. And that, I think, has since resolved. But their numbers, when it did resolve, came down dramatically, as we see in a report we put out every month in our E-Zine Metals and Manufacturing Outlook, which is the scattergram by Norbert Orr, who's also a senior correspondent on our show.
Right, right. Now, speaking about MMO and metals and manufacturing, I would highly recommend that our listeners
I don't know who can hear who or not hear who, because it appears that Lou's just dropped out. He is, as we said, in a car traveling. So he was talking about our E-Zine Metals and Manufacturing Outlook, which I think you can find at mmoezine.com. That's mmoezine.com, where you can sign up. It goes out monthly, contains a ton of information. So we encourage everyone to become a subscriber. It's a free subscription. And you can certainly become an advertiser. There's lots of advertising space in it. And it's part of a larger package deal that includes Manufacturing Talk Radio and it includes Women in Manufacturing. So, Lou, I was just giving all of our listeners kind of an explanation of what Metals and Manufacturing Outlook is.
Great, great. And actually, this past month, we partnered with Modern Metals Magazine, which is quite well known, and we presented their article for the forecast for manufacturing for 2019 as part of our outlook. So we had a 2019 manufacturing outlook from Modern Metal Magazine, and I wish to thank them for that. It's really a terrific article if you're in the manufacturing sector to see where you may wind up.
Yeah, clearly lots of information coming out of these publications and radio shows, which are all sponsored by All Metals and Forge Group. So the other place to check it out is steelforge.com. That's Lou's primary company. All Metals and Forge Group is an open-die forge company and a manufacturer of seamless rolled rings in many different alloys of the what we call the families of steel, which are carbon steel and alloy, tool steel and stainless. They also do the nickel alloys, which are always entertaining to work on because they're a really challenging material with great properties depending on what application they're used in, along with titanium. So, Lou, your company does quite a bit of alloys in a lot of interesting families.
And I'm glad you went into this, because this way we don't have to interrupt the show with a all-metal St. George commercial. So those of us who are in the engineering booth, we don't need a commercial for AMFG. We just have to be patient with Chris. I'm sure he will show up. To depart from that for a moment, being that we're talking about futures, now might be as good a time as any to talk about some of the shows that we have in development that are going to start breaking in January and February. As you all know, we do have Manufacturing Talk Radio. We also have Women in Manufacturing. But we've got a couple, I think as many as almost five in the can that we're going to be presenting. Namely, Where's Willie, who is a sales manager type who travels all over the country 2-3 weeks a month, and he will be talking to manufacturers all over the country. So, hence the name Where's Willie, and his name is Willie Miller. We also have Cliff Waldman doing a report on his expertise, which is the global economies. What else we got? We have Amy Nicholas, who's going to be on Wham, have her own show on Wham, which is called Full Time. And it's going to be basically having a woman who's carrying full load, running a family, running the kids, paying the bills, and becoming a successful businesswoman in her own right. And so I'm kind of excited about that that show as well. I know we have two more, but I'm running out of brain power here. Tim, what are the other two?
You know, I don't recall them offhand either, Lou. We've got so much in development, and a lot of our focus right now is going into the Where's Willie launch and also into the Cliff Waldman launch, Manufacturing Matters. But the exciting part is that Chris Keel, Dr. Chris Keel, has just joined us from wherever in the universe he is. Chris, Lou is on Route 46 up in Cape Cod, and I'm in Atlanta waiting to get iced in. Where are you hanging your hat these days?
Well, very good. I'm home, but as usual, getting confused about time zones. I'm going to call in at noon. Oh, wait a minute. That's noon, your time. You know, it's like, why doesn't the world revolve around Kansas City? That's what I want to know. So.
Yeah, right. Well, it should revolve around your number.
Chris, you have an amazing radio voice, really.
Yeah,
either that or you have
I'm amazing at something, but I'm not sure what it would be.
Well, being that you're amazing at something, why don't we get right into the CMI?
There we go. That would be a good idea. So, we have been noticing, we have seen kind of a rebound with the PMI, which was nice to see. And I don't know if your commentary included sort of the reasons why, but there was a lot of speculation that some of that was due to the fact that there had been a lot of advance buying, kind of companies trying to beat the deadlines for the tariffs and things like that. That's also been a factor with the CMI. We've seen an awful lot of kind of preparatory activity, companies getting the inventory in ahead of time because they think that there's going to be higher prices and tariffs and trade regulations and all that stuff interfering. So I think we're going to have some of the same reaction down the road. One of the concerns when you have that kind of advance purchasing is that companies are going to overdo it, and they're going to have more inventory, really, than they planned on, and then they're going to have trouble dumping it if they don't sell it off in the allotted time. So the news was good, but it's got that little cautionary note saying, okay, did we kind of goose up this month's figures with some anticipation, and are we going to pay for it down the road? The other thing that was interesting about the CMI this month was that we, again, had the real disparity between the good news numbers and the bad news numbers. Most of the growth was in the favorable categories, which were things like sales and applications for credit and dollar collections, and most of the bad news were in things like disputes and accounts up for collection and bankruptcies and things like that.
Chris, I'd like to go back a moment or so about the good news stuff in regards to manufacturers heavily purchasing to make sure they don't get hit further with tariffs. I would, my opinion only, I would think that almost all bets are off in view of what transpired over this past weekend with the arrest of a Chinese technology person in Canada, and the fact that they were going to delay additional tariffs in January for 90 days. I don't know if that's going to happen.
You know, there's an awful lot of speculation about what it means that this took place. You know, at the level that the talks have been performing, I don't know that this is that big a deal. The Chinese and the United States are not happy with each other. They have found all kinds of reasons to fight. The two countries are not on the same page when it comes to even trade rules. So I don't think this particular move is any more significant than any of the others that have taken place in the last several months. This has become a war of wills. It is who's going to blink first. And the fact of the matter is that China is going to be forced to blink before we do, for the very simple reason that we are demanding different things from each other. Both countries are going to get hurt, but China stands to be hurt long-term. They need to find a new consumer, and there just simply isn't any. There's no country in the world that buys the way we do. So there's no alternative to China except for us. I mean, they can't sell to the Europeans at that level. They can't sell to other Asians at that level. We, on the other hand, have to find another source. We're going to have to find countries to buy from other than China. And there are lots and lots of options, not immediate, but, for example, the Indians are racing to fill that gap. They have disadvantages to overcome, things like their transportation system, but I've spoken to several Indian business delegations already, and they said, look, we've been competitive when it comes to producing this stuff for years. We just could never get past our bad transportation system, but now that the tariffs are kind of leveling the playing field, we can be as competitive as we want to be. So I think at the end of the day, China is going to have to capitulate on some areas that matter most to us. And if we continue to stay true to that notion that there's three things that we want from China, I think we'll eventually get enough of a deal that some of this trade will resume. But it won't resume until there has been a certain amount of pain inflicted on both sides.
Well, I guess the trick is not so much what we believe, but we have to hope that China believes it and understands that they have to think. So if they're playing
they do. Yeah, I think they do. But the Chinese are also, they're in some ways more familiar with our political system than we are with theirs. And they understand that going into the next year, the president will be weaker, not necessarily to China's benefit, but it could be. And China will use every trick in their book to influence Congress to take steps that would be seen as favorable to China. Now, I think that's a little bit of a pipe dream because there's antagonism towards China within the Democratic Party as well as Republican. But on the other hand, China has successfully used lobbying techniques in the past. I think once they understand that that may not be an option or not enough of an option, the three things that we're asking from them are not really that hard, particularly two of them. They may even be consistent with what Xi would like to see in his own country, but it's probably the third area that would be the most difficult. I don't think they'll have trouble in the end in being a little bit less acquisitive when it comes to our technology. I think they can at some point be better protective of our intellectual property. The area they'll struggle most with is taking away subsidies for their export-oriented industries. So if we at some point settle for two out of three, I think we can probably get a deal. If we insist on all three, it could take longer.
So,
Chris, how much how much of China's GDP can China drive? I know that they were originally focused on being an export economy. Now they're trying to be a consumer economy. How much of their economy can they drive with their own consumption?
The numbers vary. There's been some kind of contesting over the numbers as to whether we can trust all of the things that come out of China or not. The estimate has been somewhere around 60%, 65% is driven domestically. I mean, it's a big country with an awful lot of consumers. And so even just in their old traditional ways, they spend an awful lot of money domestically. But that still leaves them with 40-35% dependent on exports. In contrast, in the U.S., it's about 15%. So in most countries in the world, 15-20%. Germany, on the other hand, is 50% dependent on exports. So
wow.
The Germans are a lot more dependent than the Chinese would be. But again, an awful lot of what Germany is selling to is its own European neighbors. In the case of China, they are selling predominantly to consumer-oriented countries like us, like the Europeans, the Japanese, but none of those countries buy anywhere near the volume we do.
So going forward, Chris, the China situation aside, what are you looking at 2019? Everyone seems to be doing hip hip hooray. You sometimes have a little bit of a negative spin on futures. So why don't you give us your thoughts on that?
Oh, I'm shocked. You think I have a little bit? No, I'm really negative. You know, crying out loud. I don't want to lose my license. You know, so we're not allowed to be happy. It's like, little do you know that every morning I dress in black and chant a funeral dirge as I go to work. No, 2019 is going to be a bit of a mixed bag year, but I think at the end of the year we'll see more negatives than positives. Some of the things that have been driving 2018 and to some extent 2017 will fade and have started to fade already. The impact of the tax cuts is come and gone. You know, they're not going to be repeated in the coming year, at least as far as impact. You have seen an awful lot of kind of reaction to expiration. I mean, companies are rushing to get in before, you know, the party is over. You know, companies that want to take advantage of lower interest rates have done that. Companies that want to get in before the tariffs take effect have done that. And so now you're going to have a lot of companies feeling the effects of those higher interest rates, feeling the effects of the trade restrictions. The international investor has gotten considerably more nervous, which we've seen with all the volatility. And then people are now starting to pay attention to those chronic problems that haven't been addressed. So now all of a sudden a lot of conversation again about labor shortage and conversation about infrastructure development and conversation about, you know, the fact that the dollar has gotten so strong. You know, so all of these things are going to be, I think, factors. I don't think we're heading for a really massive recession, but end of 2019, early 2020, we may have one of these short, sharp kind of Fed-directed recessions where the interest rates are sufficiently high and there's sufficient nervousness that the economy kind of falters for a quarter or two and then comes back stronger than it was before, because that kind of recession tends to be kind of cleansing. You know, it gets rid of some of the companies that aren't very well run and leaves market share open for the ones that are better.
There are some whispers out there that the Feds may curtail increasing interest rates at this point in fear of a potential recession.
Whispers, but bear in mind that when the employment data came out today, it indicated that, you know, unemployment rates, same as it was, you know, you didn't see as much hiring as you saw before, but most importantly, wages are going up rather sharply all of a sudden. So after 2 or 3 years of waiting for the Phillips curve to kick in, it's kicking in, and suddenly we're seeing that dreaded wage inflation. And the Fed has repeatedly said that it is going to respond to things like wage inflation numbers. And if you start to see it, and we are now definitely starting to see it, the only way to nip that in the bud is to raise interest rates. And nothing will set an economy off on an inflationary spiral like wages.
Meanwhile, the wage increase is as a result of skill gaps, and that they're trying to get people to come into the manufacturing sector or steal people from friendly competitors, so they give them $5 a week more. And, you know, it seems as though that it's kind of a false increase, not necessarily due to profits of the companies, but it has to do with the need of the companies.
And well, that's exactly right, and it's worse even than that, because if you were seeing people really expanding because they were poaching, or, you know, they were bringing in people with requisite skills, you would expect productivity numbers to be coming up as well. The real problem is that now companies have been so desperate for so long, they're hiring people who aren't skilled, who are going to require 2 and 3 years of training. Their productivity numbers are going to collapse, because if you can't find a welder for 3 years, so finally you give up and you hire Skippy from Quick Trip and say, all right, I'm going to train the kid to be a welder. Well, Skippy is going to be worthless for 3 years. And during that period of time, you're paying him money, and he's like, well, this is really hard compared to making a Slurpee. Well, yeah, but, you know, it's the productivity issue is going to be huge. We're going to see a real dip, and it hasn't been all that healthy to begin with. So any further loss in productivity is going to be a problem.
You know, Chris, I have to admit, I try and always outsmart you with my smart questions, and you always have a great answer.
Well, that's because, you know, I'm what's known as in the vernacular as a smart, you know what. So
Chris, I'm just wondering the impact of Brexit, whether it's a soft or a hard, and there are something like 100 ministers of parliament that vehemently oppose the deal. What's going to be the ripple in the pond between the UK and the USA if it's a hard Brexit?
Well, actually, whether it's hard or soft, the biggest ripple is going to be that Britain is going to go from being very dependent on what happens to Europe, and it'll become increasingly dependent on us. The British really have no choice but to shift their exports and imports away from their trading partners from the past. And with the dollar-pound relationship being what it is, we're going to see a whole lot more British imports into the U.S. We're going to see the British trying to buy from us, but they're not really going to have the money to do so because the pound will be so weak. So it's also likely to be an ideal time for American companies to purchase and or either merge with British companies. There's going to be a lot of companies that in the UK that'll be desperate for financing, and the US is going to sort of come into play. The other issue is that Britain may find itself much more engaged in areas traditionally it didn't engage in. Like, for example, they're now considering joining what used to be known as the Trans-Pacific Partnership. That thing that we walked away from 2 years ago is not dead. It has sort of resurrected itself as the same trade pact, only without the United States. And Britain now wants to join it. So even though it's a Pacific trade thing, the British are saying, well, we're not Pacific, but our Commonwealth brothers are there. You've got Canada and New Zealand, and, you know, so we should join by default. And that basically means that they're shifting to a Pacific strategy as well. So the impact is going to be more than people realize. We sort of look at UK as sort of this little, you know, country that maybe doesn't matter as much as it used to. It's still the fifth largest economy in the world. And if it makes a move in a significant direction, it plays a role. And it's likely to sort of complicate some of the relationships that exist between the U.S. and the rest of Europe. Because at the same time that the U.K. is pulling away from Europe, we have a president that has alienated Europe. And the Germans are in the throes of picking new leadership, and France is under strain. There's riots in the streets of Paris, and it all kind of plays in some weird way towards pushing the U.S. and the U.K. even closer together economically than they were before.
Well, that will be interesting for manufacturing here. My hope is that 2019 is going to be a strong year. I hate to ask you what 2019 is going to look like from your perspective, because you like to find the gray cloud and the silver lining, but I'll ask it anyways, Chris.
You know, I think it's as we've talked about before, it's always very difficult to sort of look at manufacturing in the U.S. as an entity, because it is so different from one sector to the other. So I think we're going to see a repeat in 2019 that we saw in 2018. Automotive will probably kind of hold its own, but you're seeing with both Ford and GM a conscious decision to say, we're not going to do small cars anymore. You know, the American people told us at one point that, hey, you know, we're concerned about gas prices and we want to drive fuel supers. And so GM and Ford and everybody else made them. And then gas prices went down, and the American people said, you know, just kidding. Actually, we hate those little things. And, you know, we don't like them. We all want to drive, you know, Ford F-350s. And, you know, the newest thing on the lot is going to be we're all going to drive our own 18-wheeler, because it's just, you know, if we're going to Costco, let's really go to Costco. And so the auto industry is going to continue making the big car and pull out of the small car. Aerospace, I think, is going to do okay because the demand for jets is up. Agriculture, on the other hand, ag equipment is going to continue to flail because it was not a good farm year. And at this point, we're not really expecting great things for 2019. You're going to have construction is going to continue to be kind of a mixed bag. So if the government does not fund public sector infrastructure work, then you're not going to have a lot of activity there. But meanwhile, the commercial construction side is fighting back, and then healthcare manufacturing continues to boom. So I think this is going to be one of those areas where, in general, manufacturing may sort of hold its own and be roughly about what it was in 2018. But within that broad category, it's going to be good news for healthcare manufacturers, bad news for people in the ag sector, good news for people in the oil and gas sector, not so good news for public sector construction. And it's going to be, even when I speak to groups that are in sort of specific areas of manufacturing, they can have just radically different expectations for the coming year. Just got through speaking to people in the metal building business, and they're expecting a pretty good year. Metal buildings are kind of back in, and as a result, they're happy, whereas spoke not that many months ago to people in the farm implement sector, and they're just like, oh my God, can the year get any worse? And my answer was, oh yeah, actually.
there was an interesting fact that I heard this past week, and it's not necessarily indicative of the entire automotive industry, but I did find it interesting that Tesla, in the third quarter, outsold Mercedes
mm-hmm.
in this country. And
yeah.
I thought that was pretty interesting, that the rich people are buying an ugly car, an efficient ugly car, over the love of their Mercedes-Benz.
Yep, you know, it's all about being able to stand out at the cocktail party, you know. So, I mean, it's just like the Mercedes used to turn heads, but now it's like, oh, goodness, oh, Reginald, you have a Tesla. How nice. So there's a little bit of, you know, the panache involved with electric cars. But on the same token, you're getting GM cutting back on the production of its electric car. You know, the average person is still looking at it a little bit as a novelty. You know, it's still, there's still this conversation of, well, would it help if we said that electric cars were also gluten-free? And you know, it's just, you know, we'll see how that goes.
That should certainly be very...
It's going to prove to be an interesting year. And Tim, you got any wrap-ups? We don't want to take up too much of Chris's time. It's for him to spread his black thoughts around the world.
You know, it is my mission to send people into the weekend depressed, because I'm doing my good work as an economist, because we all know that people, when they get sad, indulge in shopping therapy. You know, so I'm just trying to boost retail sales.
Chris, as a matter of curiosity, we haven't talked about South America, particularly Brazil on maybe the upside, and Venezuela. Can they go any lower? What's happening south of the border?
Well, that's going to be interesting, too, because one of the things you have that's changing the dynamic is the new leader of Brazil, Jair Bolsonaro, is an avowed Trump acolyte. At least that's what he says publicly. He's being referred to as kind of Latin America's Trump. He's, you know, nationalistic. He's from the right wing, et cetera. The way that's playing out right now is that the United States has suddenly become a whole lot more conciliatory towards Brazil. And, you know, Brazil has been exempted from the steel tariffs, for example. We have quietly dropped a number of cases against Embraer. We are eagerly looking to buy more ethanol from Brazil and more soybeans from Brazil. And I think what's happening is that you've gotten a kind of a signal from the White House that, okay, Brazil is now an ally. Bolsonaro likes Trump, likes the United States. This contrasts with the previous administration there. And I think it's a signal to other countries saying, see, when your leaders didn't like the U.S. and didn't like Trump, we hurt you. When your leaders like us, we help you. And so there's going to be a little bit of this reverberating through the rest of Latin America. I think Venezuela is just a disaster in its last throes. I mean, at some point, the whole country utterly collapses. Somebody takes over, but it is so far gone now that it'll be decades in the rebuild. The other country that we're watching, of course, is Mexico. because they also have a new leader, AMLO, Andres Manuel Lopez Obrador. We're hoping that he becomes sort of like Lula was in Brazil, very left-wing until he gets elected and then kind of drifts to the center. But that remains to be seen. Again, it's going from a right-wing administration under Peña Nieto to a more left-wing administration. Whether that means even less cooperation between the U.S. and Mexico, hard to say. But I don't think that it's going to be a country that is any easier to deal with under the new leadership. But we'll see. At the end of the day, the critical thing between the U.S. and Mexico is immigration, and neither country really looks like they want to budge on that issue.
Well, it'll be interesting to see what happens with Brazil tariffs. I know they had some incredibly punishing import tariffs to protect their industries, and even with all the corruption, that didn't help. I don't know if those import tariffs will drift out to sea or not.
Chances are they won't. You still have a very protectionist administration. Brazil is now being led by a right-wing populist, and as we have seen with our own government, that kind of populism is protectionist, and it is almost on the verge of isolation. So I would be surprised to see Brazil become more open to imports. I think what it's mostly going to do is try to leverage some of its political clout to open up export opportunities, and I think it'll have some success there with the U.S. Now, maybe they'll decide to offer concessions as a thank you, but I don't know. The other thing to be aware of with Bolsonaro is he doesn't really have a huge support base within their legislature. So it's kind of a challenge to change anything systematically because his political party is small. I mean, he won the presidency, but it's not a parliamentary system. So it's not like his party won. It was like he won and his party itself is quite small.
Okay. Well, Chris, one more question before I let you go. The retail buying season looks to be shaping up pretty well. I know in every year we hear about, gosh, how's the retail buying season going to be? And then in about February we hear it was okay or it was awful. What's it look like in 2018?
Well, so far it's been pretty good. We basically have three phases to get through every year. First phase is when the professional shoppers go, and that's the women. And they're out, and they've done the sales, and they've done the discounts, and they're the ones who make Black Friday sing, and their work now is done. So now we have phase two, which is kind of the slow period where women have done all their shopping, and men haven't started yet. And then we have phase three, which is when the males finally go, oh, my God, Christmas is tomorrow, and we go shopping. And we discover all sorts of things about the American male. Of the men who shop at the last minute, which is the vast majority of us, about 60 to 70%, fully half of them do all of their shopping at a convenience store. So for those women out there who are getting Slim Jims and a six-pack of beer for Christmas, now you know why. So if the male panics and ends up spending far more money than they had intended to because they didn't know what to do, we'll have a really good, strong end to the retail season. If the male basically comes to the conclusion that, oh, well, I'm not going to buy her anything that she wants anyway, she's just going to return it, they go out and just buy any old thing. What's really disastrous is if you let men buy gift cards, because then they get cheap. And so it all comes down at the last minute to the men, and we have consistently screwed it up. So we'll see what happens this year.
Well,
just thinking that on an up note.
That was a great analysis. We appreciate it, and we always appreciate having you on Manufacturing Talk Radio. Thanks again for joining us.
You're very welcome. We'll talk to you guys later.
All right.
You too. And shop early.
Yeah, right. And that was Dr. Chris Keel, who was with Armada Corporate Intelligence. He's also the chief economist for the Fabricators and Manufacturers Association International. He writes the Credit Managers Index Report for the National Association of Credit Managers. He works with the forging industry. Pretty well-versed, as you have heard, in the economy, whether it is in this United States, a pocket of the United States, or some pocket of some country almost anywhere in the world. We always enjoy having him on the show. Lou, he was terrific today.
He's always worth a lot of giggles. And he really knows this stuff. And we appreciate him being on our show on a regular basis. So that being said, tune in to us next week for our next week we're going to have the ISM 2019 forecast also, which is always a big show. Gives you a good insight into what's coming for the following year, particularly in the manufacturing sector. And hopefully they're a little bit more up than perhaps Chris with his black suit. And we'll just have to wait till we hear about it.
No doubt. And that's 11:30 a.m. live on Manufacturing Talk Radio, Eastern Time, Monday, December 10. Be sure you tune in for the Institute for Supply Management's 2019 forecast. We will be interviewing Tim Fiore and Anthony Nieves on our show then, and we will hope that you will visit mfgtalkradio.com and check out all of our shows, as well as womenandmfg.com. That's our women in manufacturing shows. And coming up soon, we'll have some other ones, and we'll keep you posted on all of those. But thanks today for joining us on Manufacturing Talk Radio.
Thanks for joining us on Manufacturing Talk Radio. You can hear our next broadcast each Tuesday at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time at mfgtalkradio.com.